Chapter 3.
Lieutenant Commander Del Mico piloted the Lambda-class T-4A towards the silver-gray-brown Ecumenopolis that was Coruscant. Once it had been home, but he had not returned for a very long time. The sight of white clouds coyly offering glimpses of a world composed almost entirely of the artificial was nostalgic and curiously comforting. Which was good, because ever since he'd gotten the mysterious summons, the former chief engineer of the Star Destroyer Implacable had been more than a little on edge. He'd reported for duty this morning, bleary-eyed as always before that first cup of caff, to find his crew awaiting him in engineering. Lieutenant Nalin Bashan, his immediate subordinate, had told him there was a message for him in his office. "Top priority," she said, almost blurting the words. She and the rest of engineering did their best not to look alarmed, and Mico, of course, had also done his best to also not look alarmed. All of them knew that after the destruction of the Death Star, nothing, absolutely nothing, was going to be the same, and they were all prepared for the worst. Admiral Dayan's face, always florid, had been outright flushed as he spoke. "You're to be reassigned, Del," he had said, using the chief engineer's name instead of his rank, and thus revealing how much the information had thrown him. "Admiral Garrick Versio requested you specifically." And that was apparently all Del was going to get. In the relative privacy of the shuttle, Nalin had asked Variance on what the hell is going on. Del had nothing to tell her. So instead, they told stories about their first time on the ship, and the ritual of practical jokes to which nerf meat newcomers to the team were always subjected. But now, with Coruscant filling their view screen, they fell silent. Then Nalin spoke. "Del, do you think this has anything to do with you having been stationed on Scarif?" Del forced himself not to wince. Earlier in his career, he'd been a soldier, not an engineer. He had begun Imperial service as a stormtrooper and had seen his share of battle. Later, he had served as a shore trooper on the Imperial base that was once considered a working holiday. Most of the friends he'd made during that time had still been stationed there when the rebel attack occurred. None had survived it. "I've been asking myself that," Del admitted. "But I can't think why. That was a long time ago." "Lots of rearranging going on," Nalin said, then added after clearing her throat, "lots of positions to fill." "I serve at the Empire's pleasure," Del said, and while it was the expected reply, it was also true. "I've no idea what this is about, and if I did, well, I could tell you, but..." They chuckled together at the ancient joke, and the mood lightened. Del maneuvered the shuttle down, skimming along the white clouds pierced here and there by Duracrete sky towers, their gleaming reinforced glass windows catching the light. Below that layer, the vessel entered the often dangerous, speedy flow of busy traffic that constantly crowded the space above the capital world of the Empire. Their destination was Imperial City, specifically the section that had, until recently, been called the Senate District. But there was no Senate any longer. When the shuttle was within a few kilometers of the area, two smaller ships materialized, seemingly out of nowhere.
"You have entered a restricted area," came a clipped, cold voice. "Identify yourself and prepare to be rerouted and boarded."
Del and Nalin exchanged glances.
"This is Vessel 4240C of the Star Destroyer Implacable. I am Lieutenant Commander Del Mico. My co-pilot is Lieutenant Nalin Bashan. Our authorization code is..."
"Authorization code is irrelevant. Sending coordinates. Reroute immediately."
Something was wrong. Del remained calm, as he said.
"I've been ordered to report to Admiral Garrick Versio."
There was a pause. A long one. Then...
"Authorization code."
Del gave it. Another long pause. Then...
"You are cleared to proceed. We will provide escort. Head to these coordinates."
The coordinates appeared on the console, and Del entered them. As he punched in the last number, he permitted himself to exhale. The two ships dropped to either side of the shuttle, one slightly ahead, the other a bit behind.
Griffin hell, Miko. It looks like you were right about having to kill me, Naylan exclaimed, her eyes wide. That name was like a magic word out of a folktale or something. Well, I am definitely a hero in my own mind. As the shuttle drew nearer to the restricted area, Del glanced at the great dome and wondered what it would be called, now that there was no Senate in the Senate district. He wasn't about to inquire. We're going to miss you, Del, Naylan said. You'll make an excellent chief engineer, Del reassured her. I mean, now you will. You were pretty slipshod when you arrived, but I trained you well. That got the desired eye roll out of her. He smothered his own grin. Wisecracks weren't regulation, but Del let his team indulge in them. He knew well enough how to be serious, deadly serious, when the time came. Sobering slightly, he said, I'll miss you all, too. One wasn't supposed to get overly attached to one's team, but Del did. He got attached to a lot of things, and one of the most challenging lessons he'd had to learn was how to curb his natural friendliness. But his time in engineering was done, and soon the mystery of just what Admiral Garrick Versio wanted from Chief Engineer Del Miko would be solved. Del only hoped the revelation wouldn't be something he'd regret. The young woman was diminutive, both small and slight, and the chair in which she sat, as her eyes darted rapidly from one screen to the next, came perilously close to engulfing her. But she had grown used to it, and she swiveled and turned as necessary. Short, neatly trimmed nails tipped the small fingers that flew over the controls. There was a tiny, nearly invisible earpiece in her right ear, through which a musical language of clicks and whistles came. Most would find any or all of the situation distracting, but the young woman had learned to master it. Her eidetic memory ensured that brief perusal of an item was all that was required.
Lieutenant?
Lieutenant Sen Morana's gaze went toward the one screen in the room that had been dark a moment before. The face of Jastin Vrain, her assistant, was laced with an expression of confusion and a flicker of concern.
Yes, Ensign,
Sen replied, returning her attention to the half-dozen screens and the words scrolling across two of them.
There's a message for you. It's coming from Admiral Garrick Versio, Security Level 2.
Admiral? That was new. But then, so much was new since the destruction of the Death Star. Sen had barely left this room since the word had come, shocking everyone and overturning everything she had believed and hoped and trusted was real. She knew of Versio and had worked on some cross-faction cases for him. She had never met him, never interacted with him, and was surprised that he knew her name. And level two. That was the top clearance she had. Whatever it was big, and would require her full attention. Sen rapidly hit buttons to pause the vidscreens, then took a deep breath.
Security level two in place. Patch it through.
Jastin's pleasant face was replaced by the gruff, almost grizzled one of now Admiral Garrick Versio. Sen listened. Her eyes grew wide, and she began to smile. At 0850, Iden Versio and Gideon Hask strode into the Admiral's private conference room shoulder to shoulder. One of Admiral Versio's favorite phrases was, "If you're early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're late." Both Gideon and Iden had internalized that message. Iden wore her black TIE pilot's uniform, but did not bring the helmet to the meeting. Gideon was clad in the smart gray-green gabberwool of his officer's uniform, his cap removed and tucked under his arm. Oddly, it was the first time Iden had ever visited her father at his place of work. When she was growing up, he'd had an office in one of the rooms of their house, but she'd seldom been allowed in there either. This new office was located on the top floor of the Imperial Security Bureau headquarters, and it was as cool, efficient, and without embellishment as the man himself. There was no art on the smooth white Endurasteel walls, no rugs on the mirror-like surface of the floor, nothing but data pads and equipment on the tables.
They were greeted by an impossibly perfect lieutenant, a young man about 3 years older than Aiden, with blonde hair, green eyes, and startlingly white teeth.
Good afternoon, lieutenants. Please follow me.
The meeting room consisted of a black table, 6 chairs, a small table to one side, and an entire wall devoted to consoles. It had 2 occupants already. One was a dark-haired man with a friendly-looking face whom Aiden guessed was about 10 years her senior, wearing the same uniform as Gideon. He was tall and broad-shouldered, but not bulky. The other was a young woman, petite, but sitting with perfect military straightness in her chair. Her light brown skin and short black hair was set off by the crisp white tunic that marked her as being affiliated with intelligence in some manner. Her eyes were dark brown with an epicanthal fold, and her fresh face betrayed her youth. She looked right out of the academy, if not younger, and Aiden spared a moment to wonder at how she'd already achieved the rank of lieutenant. Both rose as Aiden and Gideon entered. The young woman saluted.
"Lieutenant Sen Morana, Naval Intelligence," she said, her voice a pleasant, girlish treble.
"And I'm Lieutenant Commander Del Miko."
The man's voice suited his face, friendly, but not effusive.
"Senior Lieutenant Aiden Versio," Aiden said, returning the salute. "And this is Gideon Hask, Lieutenant J.G.
"Excellent,"
came the Admiral's brisk voice as he strode into the room, commanding and receiving their full attention.
"You've all met. No need to waste time on pleasantries, then. At ease. Take a seat."
The 4 young officers obeyed and turned to look at the Admiral expectantly. He had offered them no refreshment, and indeed Aiden knew the members of the little gathering could count themselves fortunate that they had been invited, or rather, ordered, to sit. Versio's dark eyes roamed over each of the faces turned toward him, settling on Aiden's. The stern visage gentled, ever so slightly.
"Lieutenant Versio," he said, "I'm glad you could join us."
Aiden felt a quick flush of warmth. Gideon had been right. Her father was glad to see her.
"Thank you, sir," she said. That was, apparently, enough sentimentality for the Admiral. He turned to again address the entire gathering.
"I direct your attention to the holoprojector in the center of the table."
Aiden went rigid. She suspected what they were about to see, and she realized it had been she who was responsible for it being here. Gideon glanced at her, one brow raised in question. She shook her head almost imperceptibly. Aiden watched along with the others, stone still. The only part of her that moved was the quick pulse of the vein in her slender throat. She saw the battle unfold again, heard the sound of orders being issued, a countdown, the flash of light, a chaotic careening of her ship. She forced herself not to look away, but out of the corner of her eye she registered the reactions of her fellows. Miko's face displayed shock. Morana's eyes were wide and her lips parted slightly. Even Gideon had turned a shade paler, and she could tell he was forcing himself not to glance over at her, to illogically confirm with his own eyes yet again if she was all right. Her father, mercifully, ignored her completely.
"I believe we all know what this is,"
Versio said, pausing and then deactivating the hologram.
"This recording is currently being analyzed and evaluated as one of a handful recovered from ships that were out of the direct blast area."
Aiden was grateful he didn't single her out. But from the sidelong glances of Miko and Morana, she suspected they knew anyway.
"This was a dark day for our empire. A very dark day. But, as you can imagine, and perhaps already know, we are working on plans for retaliation against the Rebel Alliance on every level open to us. We're doubling down in areas where we have, perhaps, been a trifle lax. For instance, we control the major media throughout the galaxy, but we've rooted out over 2 dozen smaller pirate transmitter stations. We commandeered them to broadcast the execution of several high-ranking prisoners, and then destroyed the stations. There are still a few operating out there, but not many, and we anticipate that soon there will be no more difficulty from the media." You are aware the Senate was dissolved. We are presently in the process of arresting all members, including some who served in years past, and confining them in the Arth Inu prison complex. They will remain imprisoned until we can assess the level of participation each has had with the Rebel Alliance. We're reaching out to possible sympathizers among the rebels' numbers, seeing if we can't coax them to join the right side. We have plans from the very grand to the very intimate, and the latter is where the four of you come in. There's a particular front in this battle that I have suggested be addressed, and I have been given authorization to proceed.
Aiden's father was using that voice. That voice meant something very big, very significant, and very personal to him was going on. That he was including her in it made Aiden feel proud, but it also put her on high alert. She sat erect in her chair, her eyes on her father, her breathing slow, and listened.
Our glorious Death Star was destroyed by something very small indeed. A tiny flaw implanted by one man who single-mindedly betrayed the Empire over the course of years. One person in an X-Wing fighter hit a target only 2 meters wide.
He squared his shoulders.
We were arrogant, he said,
and only Aiden, and perhaps Gideon, knew what that admission cost him.
We paid a terrible price for that, and we will not make that mistake again. The grand scale, which is, of course, the ultimate vision of our empire, is being attended to. But the little things, they too need to be addressed. And sometimes, the fewer who do so, the better. The contribution that one small team can make when it comprises the best of the best is, I believe, both overlooked and invaluable. The distillation of individual accomplishments and skills into a smoothly functioning unit will be something the enemies of the Empire will not be prepared to guard against. After careful evaluation, I have decided that the four of you represent the finest the Empire can field.
It was quite a statement, and they all knew it.
Versio clasped his hands behind his back and walked in a predatory circle around the rapt group as he regarded each of them in turn, his eyes searching laser-like and piercing as if trying to plumb their very souls. Gideon and Aiden were used to that level of scrutiny, but familiarity made it no less intimidating. The Admiral's gaze settled on the tall man.
Del Miko. You worked your way up through the ranks, first as a stormtrooper, then a shore trooper, then a TIE pilot. You have received several commendations for courage under fire. Your commanders have made notations that you excel at whatever you turn your hand to, but you seem to be particularly gifted at repairing everything, from armor to droids to engines.
Versio smiled thinly. Your captain did not part with you with good grace. Miko was smart enough not to break eye contact with the Admiral. Garrick didn't appreciate it when those he spoke to did so, deeming it disrespectful.
If I'm standing in front of you, I damn well better have your complete attention,
Aiden had heard him say more than once. But the mechanically inclined TIE pilot did fidget slightly in his seat as he inclined his head in appreciation of the words.
Sen Morana,
Versio continued, turning to the petite young woman.
You possess the gift of eidetic memory, which has served you well throughout your career.
You graduated top of your class at the Imperial Academy of Uitor a full year early, and with honors. You speak 27 languages, is that correct? He paused to let her answer. In that sweet voice, the very young lieutenant replied,
29, sir.
Versio's eyebrows rose.
29, he said,
his voice a gravelly purr.
I stand corrected. You can read and write 7 more. Is it 7, yes? I'd hate to be mistaken a second time.
The girl, Aiden couldn't help but think of her that way, clearly Sen was barely into her 20s at best, seemed to be seriously reconsidering her earlier quick correction of Versio. But she replied,
"Yes, 7, sir."
7? You are also a master cryptologist, and a superior shot who can take out a foe at over 5 kilometers.
Iden regarded the girl with considerably more respect. Now Versio turned to Gideon. Iden, who knew him so well, saw her father's expression soften with pride.
Gideon Hask, first in his class at Coruscant Imperial University, served with valor aboard the Mandate, received a battlefield promotion and the Crimson Star for exceptional performance against the enemy. And finally, Iden Versio, graduated top of her class at Coruscant Imperial University with honors, one of a handful of survivors of the Death Star where she had held the record for most verified kills in battle, and has the melancholy honor of never losing that title. Your mission will be to recover information, artifacts, or individuals that could prove harmful to the Empire if they fall into the wrong hands, or if, perchance, such information has already fallen into the wrong hands. You'll be cleaning things up, as it were.
We've just borne witness to the level of damage that can be inflicted upon our Empire when such pivotal information is used against us. We cannot, must not, shall not allow this to happen ever again. Is this understood?
Everyone replied quickly in the affirmative.
The Admiral nodded.
You will do as you are instructed. No questions. We need to recover anything and everything, anyone and everyone who might pose the slightest threat to the Empire. You are all accustomed to being part of something larger than yourselves, to being a part of a vast machine, but this unit will be a microcosm of only 4. You'll be performing the majority of your duties without direction from me. In fact, there may be lengthy periods of time when you will not be in contact with me at all. It is imperative that you learn very quickly how to work together smoothly and efficiently. You'll find that a great deal of weight will be resting on your shoulders.
Iden's heart began to slam slowly against her chest, but she gave no sign of it. It wouldn't do to register how thrilled these words made her feel. Responsibility was exactly what she wanted. The team, as a whole, it seemed, would be given a great deal of it, but she wanted more.
Now, her father continued, while I will be the one evaluating your performances and assigning your missions, I will not be your field commander. That challenging role will fall to one of you. Your strengths are so unique and varied, it's difficult for me to tell which of you will stand out.
Iden's face grew hot. She did not know if it was from anger or mortification. How could her father say this? Had he not monitored her behavior her entire life? What more did he need? He went to a side desk and picked up 4 data pads, passing them out.
So I have decided how that process might be made easier. Your task is twofold. On those data pads is information on your first mission. You'll be permitted to do further research on your own. First, by 0900 tomorrow, I want a proposed mission outline from each of you. All the information you'll need is here. I'll use it to evaluate who will oversee this initial endeavor. You will work with that individual fully and completely. Is that understood?
Murmurs of yes, sir, went around the table.
Good. Second, your leader's position will only become permanent if the mission goes well.
Iden accepted her datapad without comment, though inwardly she was still burning with fury and shame. He knew what she was capable of, and still he thought one of these others might be a better choice. And the nature of this test, really? The best of the best had to write an essay? What was next, bed without supper if a proposal wasn't accepted? Almost, as it turned out.
You will be escorted from here to your shared suite at the Diplomat. You will not leave, but your meals will be provided. Impress me, officers. Show me how you think. Make your plan so solid, so worthy, that I cannot help but select it. Any questions?
It was always best not to have questions with Garrick Versio, but Sen didn't know that yet.
Sir, are we free to discuss among ourselves? Share what information we have?
Get what information we don't have? Aiden thought uncharitably, then chided herself for the thought.
Honestly, if she was as neck-deep in naval intelligence as she appeared to be, Sen had the least to gain and the most to lose by such sharing.
Meanwhile, Aiden thought, as her heated emotions began to dissipate, sharing could help her. She'd have to present the best plan of the four. Had to. If her father was going to assemble a team, Aiden couldn't bear to simply serve in it.
Garrick considered.
Yes, you may share.
The girl smiled, and for a moment Sen looked so young that Aiden wanted to protect her more than she wanted to fight alongside her. She dismissed the thought. Sen's youth surely belied a lot of strength. Garrick Versio would never want anyone on his team who wasn't strong. After all, they were the best of the best. That logical conclusion meant that the quiet Del Miko also had something special to offer. And of course, Aiden knew Gideon well enough to know how much he brought to the table.
Any other questions?
There were none. Versio nodded. Dismissed. The four got to their feet, saluted, and turned to go. At the door, though, Gideon hung back, considering, then asked his new commanding officer.
Sir, does this unit have a name yet?
The faintest of smiles quirked Versio's lips.
It does,
he replied.
It's a promise to the rebels.
It's called Inferno Squad.